Who are you guys?
We're the Ghostbusters.
Who does your taxes?
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Talking Smack, where we talk superheroes, movies, animation, comics, and much, much more. I'm your host, Josh Scar, and joining me, as more often than not, is Alex. Alex, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic. We had 6 inches of snow on Friday. It's mostly all gone today.
I told you we'd get more snow. I said it.
And how many of your neighbors were out there just watching you being all elitist, blowing that snow away?
Oh, no, I did the inverse this time. I was like, I know I could, but it's going to be gone in 2 days. So fuck y'all.
So you were out there on your porch, little like a rocking chair, smoking a cigarette, watching them shovel, going like,
hey, nah, hey, I'm an elitist. I vape. Okay.
Oh, you vape. How are you doing this fine day?
I could be better, but I'm here with you, so can't do much better than the alternative right now.
I was really afraid that was about to be a turn there, like, but I'm here with you, so it could definitely be much better.
Oh, no. With the way things are going, it's only uphill with you.
So tell me, sir, what is it that you have on the docket for us?
Well, first and foremost, we have to make sure everyone is aware that we are still running our sweepstakes. As of this recording, we are 10 weeks away from the Talking Smackdowns Volume 5 and drawing for our giveaway, where we will, any entry into the Talking Smackdowns, any suggestions into the Talking Smackdowns, gets you entered into our drawing for a Steam edition of Marvel Midnight Suns. And all you have to do is send us an email at tsmackpod@gmail.com. Enter for a chance to win. We have like 3 or 4 people that have submitted multiple, and I'm getting really excited. I've mocked up some fight cards, and we'll do the typical Twitter survey that we've been doing for each one, and that'll be our tiebreaker if we need to. But we've got like 25 submissions, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think I've made like 8 or 9 fight cards right now. I don't know if I'm going to do all 25, just because some of them are really intrinsic, and I don't want to do too many of them that are like, here's 5 Vin Diesels versus 17 Tom Cruises. And it's just like, no, I don't have time for that. And I don't know if my Photoshop skills are able to do that.
17 Tom Cruises is a little overkill for Vin Diesel. Tom Cruise does his own stunts.
He also can shoot lightning from his hands.
He can. We've seen that clip of him shocking Oprah until she had to quit her show.
That almost ruined Oprah. Like, that's the kind of power Tom Cruise has.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also here to talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And first and foremost, we have to hear from someone whose opinion on this movie that I'm looking forward to when his episode drops. And also filled in for me last week. Holy cow, YouTube, you love some James Cameron, or maybe it's Justin Henson. I don't know. It could be both. No. I mean, I don't blame you for both.
Oh, we love it.
But YouTube, you love the Jimmy Cameron stuff right now. Mm-hmm. That's like our highest rated or most viewed episode on YouTube right now.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
So thank you very much to everyone who tuned in on YouTube for that one, especially when it's just a stagnant picture of the episode art. So thanks again. But we're going to hear from Justin, and when we come back, we're going to talk Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. We'll be right back.
He's on the run from the law, falsely accused of murdering his... Wait. Oh, got my scripts mixed up here. Here we go. This makes more sense. The Movie Wire Podcast with host Justin Henson. Hear Justin's movie verdict wherever you listen to podcasts. Tune in to The Movie Wire today.
We're back. This is Alex's most anticipated movie of 2024, I think, besides maybe Deadpool.
Oh, yeah.
Those are also two of the most like interesting discussion points of where something is, where a franchise is in its zeitgeist standing. Mm-hmm. Because I think when we finished recording our Avatar episode, you and I were talking a little bit off air, and you had said that this movie is going to kind of be the litmus test to whether or not Ghostbusters is actually a multi-movie franchise, or if it's just a one and done or one and a half done instant classic. And I think that's a really interesting one that I've been thinking about since I watched this movie. And I do feel like this is kind of Jurassic Park, where it's the first one is just pitch perfect. then the rest is diminishing returns because the concept can't really evolve. And so you're kind of stuck constantly doing the same final act, just doing little twists here and there with it. And I do think this one is probably the second best Ghostbusters movie. I'll say that much. Maybe third. You could maybe argue me down to third. Mm-hmm. But I think this one did some interesting things that if it wasn't tied to a lot of the Ghostbusters nostalgia, that it would have been a pretty good movie on its own.
So I will admit at this moment that my viewing experience for this movie did twist my perception a little bit. So I am being a little more favorable to it than if I had seen it in a different environment.
Well, you know what, Alex? I'm sorry. I've already talked myself out of it. This is probably the third best one.
Well, I'll talk you back to second.
No, I don't know if you can. I've already talked myself into it. It's very solidly third, maybe fourth. Is this Ghostbusters 3, 4, or 5? They acknowledge 2. So is this Ghostbusters 4, 5, or 6? Because you have Ghostbusters 3, which is the game,
mm-hmm.
but they don't really acknowledge that.
Not yet. They'll get there.
Only if they can all stay alive for a little bit longer, or the rest of them can stay alive a little bit longer. Because no. The video game from, what was that, 2009?
Yep, 2009. Ghostbusters.
That one
game.
Is Ghostbusters 3. And then we have Ghostbusters Afterlife, so that's 4. So this is technically Ghostbusters 5. But mm-hmm. if you want to be a troll, you could really say that Ghostbusters Answer the Call also counts, even though it's a multiverse situation. But I'm going to say this is firmly number 3. I've already talked myself down. I would say Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Frozen Empire, Afterlife, and then, well...
The game. The game's really good, though.
The game is really good. I don't know. It's fine. This is... I don't know. This one's fine. But I'm not going to rank it. Okay, so take me on my journey that you're proposing here that's going to bring me back on around to
no,
this.
No. This is my journey of why I'm more favorable. So I was like, you know what? I can't do AMC right now. I'm looking at the timing of things I've been on Saturday, not being in town. So I found a screen. It was at 12:15. Tickets were $2.50 cheaper than AMC would have been per ticket. I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
And I remembered going there. Oh God, it must have been 12 years ago. And it was definitely one of those formerly attached to a mall cinemas, you know, that we grew up in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
You know, there's like 6 to 12 screens. It has like kind of that bowl feature where it's a little bit higher towards the screen, but then it like dips down and then goes back up. It's not the stadium seating that's popular now. You know,
mm-hmm.
and so we get there and it was remodeled a few years ago. Sorry, I checked the movie time and it tells me 12:15 to 2:09 is the length of the show. And I'm like, oh, so it actually tells me the length of the movie with trailers and everything. I'm like, OK, go inside. Immediately, there's this whiff of popcorn, the buttery, gooey popcorn. I'm like, oh, OK. And it's just a little kiosk area with 4 registers and all they sell is popcorn. Ices, soda, candy for $3 to $5, depending on which candy it is, and nachos with $1 for extra cheese. And I'm just smelling this whiff of this, and I'm regressing in my childhood a little bit. Like, oh, I remember seeing movies like this. I remember seeing Jurassic Park like this, and the Aladdin and Lion King, Little Mermaid, all these. My vaguest memories of Batman when it first came out, I was regressing. It was like, nice. And we get into the theater. It is some, they have some kind of thing called HDX vision with some kind of stereo sound. It's leather recliners heated. So you can have warm, hot, or off, and then a power recliner button. So you recline back. Now, mind you, they didn't do the stadium seating. It's still the bowls. But even then, with the recliner all the way back with your feet up, there's still room to pass in front of each row. So there's no butt in the face as you wiggle past.
I had that similar recliner setting when I went to go see John Wick. Where was I when I saw that? I don't remember where I was when I saw John Wick. That was my first recliner theater experience. And I remember thinking like, oh, wow, even my long ass legs can just lay back and people can walk by without me having to feel like, oh, God, my awkwardness is going to make them like give me a lap dance unintentionally.
Yep. It started right at 12:15. There were 3 trailers, not extended trailers. Each trailer was like the 90-second trailer. One little thing about like the theater you're in, immediately into the movie, And when the credits rolled, I looked at my phone, 1209. I mean, sorry, 209. So they know what, how to get you in and get you out with a nice experience. And that is why I'm being so favorable, because I'm now going to Beloit.
Because
Classic.
You made a good life decision and yes. found a new theater.
Yes, because I'm going now to Beloit Classic Cinemas for every Dan movie.
I know Scotty, he's like, I'm not going to 14 anymore. Like, if we're going to a movie, you're coming with us to this one. And I'm like, it's a little bit more of a drive, but I mean, I've been tempted to go. Yeah, maybe you... I'll see, because I don't know if I'll be able to do Godzilla next week. If I can, I'll see if I can't make it out to that one. That sounds like an experience and a half.
Oh yeah, just make sure when you're picking it, you look for this theater that they only have, like, I think two of their 10 screens are the HDX Super 58K, but it was lovely. You know, everything was nice. And so I had a theater experience where there wasn't people shouting next to me. It wasn't 28 minutes of trailers. And I was actually just able to invest myself in the screen in front of me. And that is why I actually kind of dug this movie. Because I didn't have the weight of the current experience just sitting on me of like, oh God, I'm here on time and there's 75 trailers and somebody's sitting next to me. And then this person's talking on their phone and the screen. It's like, because they have a little sign up that says like, yeah, use your phone to find your seat, but it's off now and we enforce that. So there's not people playing with stuff and being loud and obnoxious. They have a little sign up that says, you know, like, no children under 16 allowed in R-rated movies. It's a very old school kind of style of like, don't, you know, we don't enforce anything. We don't do anything. Let everything run rampant. It's just watch the damn movie and get the hell out.
My theater experience was a little different. I went to my usual theater, 14, in McChesney, and there was a pre-roll that showed some kind of really quick clip of some kind of anime. And I just heard some bumpkin from our area go, what the hell was that? And then his girlfriend goes, an anime. And I'm just like, oh my God, is this going to be my experience today? Thankfully, those people shut up though. But then I had, throughout the trailers, I had a couple people directly behind me to my right that had to comment on everything. And I can't judge them too badly. I used to do similar shit, but I wasn't doing a podcast while watching the movies and the trailers. Like one of the guys was like, that could be interesting if my 20-year-old brain would allow me to just, you know, be a little more sophisticated and be like, oh, this doesn't look like it's going to be close to the source material, but I'm going to talk about this and give my commentary during the trailer while we're talking and everyone else is trying to experience.
So are you saying they were sitting there with the like source manga in front of them going like, nope, hair is wrong, that style is wrong, city's landscape is wrong, pictures are bad.
No, but like they had commentaries and thoughts on everything immediately after. And before we actually dive into Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I do have one more thing to say about this experience where these 20-somethings, maybe even late teenagers, we saw the Borderlands trailer.
Yep.
And the watered-down Borderlands trailer makes that movie look like so much ass. And I'm pretty sure they recycled the same shot of Kate Blanchett doing like this weird little like side smirk thing like three times in that trailer.
Yeah, the not like 3.5 minute teaser trailer.
The green band trailer.
Yeah, the green band.
Not the R band trailer, which makes me wonder if there is actually going to be a PG-13 cut of this. Like they promised an R rating and then just no one's responding to it. So they're going to be like, make it PG-13. Get us as much money as possible.
That would not surprise me at all. But Borderlands, I'm aware of the games, I'm aware of the memes, but I have one of the collections sitting in my PlayStation Plus catalog to download and play. I just haven't gotten around it. I think it looked generically fun, but there's not enough of a hook other than this is a, you know,
the cast is too old.
I'm
sorry to be a little ageist, but like Kate Blanchett is not getting the Borderlands crowd into the theater to see this movie. Kevin Hart is not getting people in to see that movie, and Jack Black as Claptrap is not getting people in to see that movie.
Yeah,
there's nothing gripping about that. I've played the first game. I did a 3-player co-op with Scotty, our buddy K Rob, and me, and I do not remember a damn thing about that game other than it's a bunch of fetch quests that eventually gets you to the point where you can get the big loot at the end.
But there's Tiny Tina and she's funny.
Oh, there's the fog of piss, the bog of piss. Roll up the windows because the bog's going to piss on you. Why did I tell you? Why didn't you roll up the window? I'm Kevin Hart, but I'm trying to play George Clooney in my things now. I'm going to go see that movie only if and because we get the Game Club boys to watch it too. That's the only reason I'm seeing this movie is because it's a crossover opportunity with the Game Club boys. So Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yeah.
Or not Afterlife, Frozen Empire. We're going full spoilers here real quick. I'm jumping straight to the end here because
you have to immerse yourself.
I was having okay time with this movie, but the end left such a bad taste in my mouth.
Okay. Are you talking the end shot, the end resolution?
No, I'm talking about like the resolution to the main conflict of the movie.
Okay, go for it.
Which is, I will give the movie credit, Kumail Nanjiani. I thought he was going to be the villain. He's the next highest grossing actor behind Paul Rudd at the Ghostbusters. So he must have been the bad guy. Like that's the way Hollywood rolls. No, he's not the bad guy. I'm like, okay, so maybe he's just a glorified cameo. He's going to have a couple funny lines and then he's gone. Fine. People want to be in a Ghostbusters movie and he's going to be just a very obvious cameo. Fine. Patton Oswalt just did the same thing. He showed up for a couple scenes and disappeared. Okay, cool. Whatever. No, he's the fucking Deus Ex Machina. He's the linchpin to finishing the fight against this new demon monster. And it's like, way to undercut the journey of your main character with Phoebe, played by McKenna Grace.
Excuse me, the main character is the fire station.
Might as well be. That is my biggest problem with this movie, is that the movie, I don't know where you would go with it. I didn't read the script, but obviously that was part of the script where they're like, oh, by the way, this guy who has been in five scenes and has not had his only impact has been that he sold the Guardians of the Galaxy orb to Dan Aykroyd. That's the thing he has contributed to this movie, is that he kicked off the main plot.
Right.
And now he also gets to have a hero moment that he didn't earn only because he's also a really big name actor.
Yeah. So I will agree. The resolution to Garakic or Garaka, the evil bad guy, it's not that necessarily I feel it's unearned, is that it isn't properly contextualized, because the resolution is not Phoebe's intellect getting them out of there or Trevor's fiddling with stuff, you know, and helping with the tech. It is that he masters his fire bending, which...
Yeah, he's a firebender.
Yeah. I mean, literally, the first thing they do to try to teach him is he has to bend a flame to a candle. But the character of Melody, who is a ghost that has some kind of romance, however you want to term it,
that's totally a queer story that they just could not commit to. They didn't want the 40-year-old bros to be like, why is that teenage girl falling in love with that teenage ghost girl?
I think you can read it multiple ways. I kind of read it as like some kind of budding flirtation, but there's also the aspect that she's like, that Melody is somewhere between the age of 15 to 900, because they don't really commit to her age.
She's eternally 16, they said.
Yeah, well, so is Edward, and that's still creepy as hell.
I mean, she's only been dead for maybe 20 years.
She said she's startlingly old, though, at one point. Her resolution, which is that she's a ghost and she's being manipulated by Garaka to mess with Phoebe to allow the Guardians of the Galaxy orb to be opened so that he can be summoned and unleash all the ghosts in the containment unit. She has, and I'm glad they established this because they have talked about it before, but there are ghosts have the little tokens that they're bound to, the spiritual tokens. And hers is a matchbook she was playing with when she died that burned herself and her family to death. And she's been holding that. It's a physical object that she as a ghost can touch and manipulate. It is unearned that a character she's never met before, that they don't show her spying on, that she doesn't know the context of his powers. If they had an establishing shot or two of her spying on him, looking at him, knowing what his abilities and power are, and then so she decides to She already did a, she was already healed. Now she's doing a face turn back to light the match and offer it to him, or have Phoebe look at her and go, light the match or something, so they can establish a connection with her and her and the firebender. That would have worked. That would have been, that would have applied to Phoebe's intellect. That would have tied the solution. Other than that, it's just random. They show her striking a match and all of a sudden he has a fireball. And it's like, but they didn't connect. There's no connection. There's no tie. That is definitely a problem.
It undermines a lot of, as you were saying, it undermines a lot of buildup for the character for Phoebe at the very least. Because we get a really good moment where she modifies her proton pack to make it effective against the new demon Grokka, whatever his name is. And I get that they did a really good job of establishing that the proton packs, as they currently operate, do not affect him. We see Lucky, who is a returning character from Afterlife, and the Grokka just freezes the proton beam. So we're like, okay, this does not work. How do we get around it? Phoebe has a really good moment with Rey where she's like, hey, we can do brass and copper, and we can modify how the proton pack is emanating, and it'll alter how it affects Grokka. Great. And when she comes up and she's all determined and she starts blasting him and it's actually affecting him, I thought that moment was done really well, but it's just completely undercut, which I think you put really succinctly, really well, that there's no context given to the resolution with the firebender. Cause the only way Grokka can be contained again, since he is an ice demon, is by a firebender, fire master, to put him back into his cell. The movie just doesn't give us that moment of Phoebe recognizing that Melody has the matchbook, or Melody's maybe just playing with it. And she, like, we just don't get that moment, like you were saying. No. And that's all it needed was a beat.
Yeah.
Where you see Phoebe click, like, matchbook, he needs fire, strike the match, fire, we're going.
Yeah. Now, the last 15 minutes is the part that has the most problems, because they spend so much time building up everything around it that they didn't establish a proper resolution. I particularly like the movie. Like, I thought the beginning part, the flashback to 1904 with them, you know, with firefighters bursting out of the station, they're going to explore this adventurers club. Everybody in there is frozen. The creepy, you know, gramophone still trying to play that tube with the hand broken off because the person was like spinning it. And then they all instantly froze and just kept kind of going the momentum. That was all gorgeously done, and a great flashback to something, especially when they set up Nadim's grandmother as this protector holding the orb. And that ceremonial suit she had was just gorgeous and looked and like. And then immediately when they get into like the day to day of being they're now Ghostbusters, this the family unit of Trevor and Phoebe and Gooberson and the mom, and they're chasing stuff. And we're in the firehouse. We actually see each level of the firehouse, what it actually is. The basement has a containment unit, and apparently that's where they do their laundry. The first floor is the offices and the car. The second floor is, of course, the research area, but also the kitchen. Third floor is the bedrooms. Top floor, attic. Apparently Slimer lives there. There's so many good little beats to this film that I was enjoying. The problem was, in their effort to drag people from Afterlife forward, like Lucky should not have been there. There's absolutely no reason for her to be
there. There's no reason for her to be there. Same with Podcast. Like, the only reason Podcast is there is because he's Ray's technical expert in getting him on YouTube, essentially.
I will forgive Podcast because Ray's his only subscriber, knows his podcast, and I can see him like them spending time together. That makes more sense.
It makes sense, but I also don't like the excuse that Ray Podcast is lying to his parents. He's like, oh, my parents think I'm at space camp.
Yeah. Like,
ghosts have been proven real at this point. Like, the fact that his family wouldn't be okay with him going to go intern for an original Ghostbuster seems a little weird to me.
Okay, I can see that being weird. I didn't think about that part. I just thought, like, him there intellectually makes more sense than Lucky. Like, why is Lucky there? The random British guy at...
You mean Egon from the real Ghostbusters?
Is that...
No, I'm just saying, like, that is clearly who he is modeled after.
I thought that was... They just made him British. Voice actor.
No, that's... to me, that the moment that guy showed up, the way his hair is coiffed, he's blonde, yeah. he's got the glasses. I'm like, that's Egon from the real Ghostbusters. Yeah. Like, that's all they're trying to do with this guy.
Yeah. So, so secretly, Winston has been funding a paranormal research lab to eventually move everybody out of the fire station, I'm guessing. And Lucky's interning there, testing the proton, the new packs and stuff. And there's this random British guy doing all the tech. And they don't have a purpose that is necessary to the plot, because for some reason, Winston hasn't told Ray or any of the Goobersons or the Spanglers that this facility is there at all. Other than they finally tell him, hey, listen, the containment unit, we're having trouble shutting it. Every time we try to close it, it's fighting us. And then it makes banging sounds. It's full. And he's like, oh yeah, I've been handling all that. That to me is a plot point for the audience. That is not a plot point in universe that makes sense. What would have made sense was they're working there. The firehouse is where they live and store ghosts. The containment mm-hmm. units aren't all quite set up and ready yet. And so Trevor's there testing, should be having Lucky's role. He should be there testing the tech, working on it. Phoebe should be in, should have that British blonde guy, Spengler. She should have his role of working on the tech. She's the one who's the tech wizard who understands the stuff. That's immediately two characters tossed out that don't need to be there. And I will tell you, the part that offended me the most was Patton Oswalt. Patton Oswalt was there in the script because they need to go research the Guardians of the Galaxy thing.
They need an excuse to go back to the library.
Yes. And you know what that excuse is? They go to the library. Not that they go to the library and he has a brief encounter with the guy from the first movie who they, you know, blew off about the library ghost. And then, oh, but you're telling Ray, oh, you're banned from here for 50 yards and just walks on through. No, that's dumb. That shouldn't be there. Why is that there? You should have them go to Ray. Ray should be looking up this thing and saying, we need to go to the library. Well, what about your library? Because they have a library. They talk about it in the first movie. They talk about Ray's a cult. He runs this place. He's like, yeah, but there's a secret library. And they go down there and Ray gives all the exposition. Patton Oswalt was there for a scene to give exposition over a narration, which was kind of cool, of an animation of Garaka's backstory.
Yeah.
That should have been Ray. That's three roles you could have excised immediately for no purpose whatsoever. They didn't need to exist.
The library scene is where I feel like the movie starts going really downhill, because that's when it starts going, remember this from previous movies? Because I had a couple of kids sitting next to me, probably 2-3 seats down, and they clearly have been indoctrinated into the Ghostbusters.
Good.
They've watched however many times with their parents or whatever. They must have been 16 because they were by themselves. But there's a really good background moment where someone's using one of the slime blasters.
Yes.
And it's a blink and you miss it kind of moment, but you can see it if you're paying attention to the background. I'm like, that's good. I like that. Okay, you're acknowledging things. And then the moment we get to the library, that's when they start throwing shit in your face. Like, this is kind of what a lot of people were afraid of with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, where is it just gonna be cameo palooza? Is it just gonna be references and whatnot? And from the library on, I don't know that there's a scene that doesn't have some kind of reference or homage in it, because the entire library sequence is done to set up a joke, besides getting Garaka's backstory, which again could have been done in Ray's a cult. He could have had a book on it.
Sure.
But we have to get into the library because we have to see the lady in the library, the ghost in the library. And Ray has to go back, and then she turns into the scary monster ghost and scares him away again. I would have loved that moment more if she was chasing someone else and Ray just kind of stopped and she turned around as the librarian and just kind of gave him a little wink.
Yeah.
Look, that would have been so much better instead of Ray being like, oh, it's her. Like, it's been 40 years. Ray has probably gone back and tried talking with her again. And she's probably warmed up to him by now.
True. I do like the idea that they've just never gone back. That they're like, we're just so busy.
That is a good idea too, but I do still feel like that is a gratuitous moment of,
I can see that.
You remember this, you like this, so we're doing it again.
There are beats of this movie that just work for me. So obviously I think our ratings are going to be a little bit different, but I would like to try a compliment. I'm going to compliment the movie, and then I want you to compliment the movie. I thought the moment in which Phoebe's been grounded because Walter Peck is back. Yes, Walter Peck's back. And basically his thing is you guys can keep doing ghost busting, but she's grounded. Phoebe's grounded because she's 15. She's underage. It's too dangerous for her. And he needs a scapegoat. And she was the one firing the proton pack, destroying part of the city while they captured the first creature. Okay, fine. That kind of works. Right. But when Ray is in his occult bookshop looking at stuff and he hears the siren sound of the Ecto-1 and it goes by and he just kind of looks whimsically out the window as it flies by. I thought that was lovely. That got me in the feels.
There's a really nice touch with Ray and Winston where there's a subplot. I'm being generous calling it a subplot where Winston's like, Ray, we're in our golden years. We should be doing something we love. And Ray's like, this is what I love. This is what I want to do with my life. And that was a really nice moment. And I like that they paid it off when they're trying to steal Garaka in the main storage compartment.
Yeah.
In the firehouse. But if you're going to make me compliment this, I will say that get all the flaws with the gratuitous Easter eggs and cameos and whatnot, which there's not many cameos. I do like that they follow the formula of the first movie where it's kind of just like the lives of the Ghostbusters yes. until this world ending thing happens in the final act. I like that we're getting little bits and pieces here and there, kind of like Dana in her apartment where just little things with her apartment being haunted and eggs crackling, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man being foreshadowed. All that stuff, I think, works really well. And I think for the most part, the movie does work really well. I've heard people compare it to an episode of The Real Ghostbusters. Like, it's just like they made a 2-hour long Real Ghostbusters episode. I would disagree with that because in my mind, you create a comparison with Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, which that movie's bad, but it's fun.
Yep. Yeah.
Where I don't know that this movie is all that much fun. But it's good. So it's a weird mirror of Out of the Shadows where it's not good and Out of the Shadows, but it's fun. But this one is pretty good, but I don't know how fun it is.
They went for more of emotion. I think they were in a little bit of a bind in what they had to do because Phoebe, between the first movie and this movie and COVID delays and all that crap, she aged pretty, I think she's 17-ish now.
They really tried to hide it with her overalls and stuff. Like there's one scene where you can see like she has matured as a young woman and they're like, no, we can't do that again.
Yeah. Like they have like kind of weird baggy overalls and then like always a flannel shirt on kind of thing over like another shirt.
They kind of did to her what they did to Sydney Sweeney and Madame Web, where it's like, well, we can't show off her bust because if she's got a big bust, she's clearly not that young. So we have to I don't know. Phoebe McKenna Grace does great with this.
She's amazing.
Again, I do wish they would have allowed her to shine a little bit more like she did in the first one.
Yeah.
Cause that first photon joke that she made, I loved it. I love those jokes. That was a great character arc or not character trait for her in Afterlife.
Yeah.
And I wish that would have stuck around. I really wish that would have been like a bonding thing for her and Melody. But they do the one joke in the start in the action sequence with the weird Mora eel something or
subway eel,
ghost eel
they called or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it just never comes back. And like, that was a key character trait for her.
Yeah.
And I know she's upset right now throughout most of this movie, but at the very end of the day, that's also a coping mechanism for her.
Yeah.
So that should be coming back.
See, I like little sentimental beats, like the references you made with Winston and Ray. That was really good. I like that she went to the park with her chess set and you look at and the way they framed it is she plays chess by herself. And because she was reaching for a piece across from her to move it when it moved on its own, and she got like super excited for a moment as it started moving.
She was hoping Egon came back, which I love that moment. That was a really good moment.
Yeah.
Because you can see the disappointment on her face once Melody reveals herself. She's like, oh, I thought you were going to be someone else.
Yeah. And she kind of looks over her shoulder. Like she like, is there another ghost nearby? Or yeah.
But I'm also very grateful that they held back on bringing Egon back again.
Yes.
Like the one time in Afterlife is enough. We don't need to keep bringing back dead actors digitally.
And then I like the moment later where she's talking about, like, Melody's talking about how she wants to just pass over, but she hasn't figured out how or why yet. And Phoebe tells her, like, I've seen ghosts passed over, and it's beautiful. Like, that works for me, those little moments. But they did relegate her, unfortunately, to this. The movie chose to actually kind of ground her as well, like, when introduce all these other characters when I think it would have been more impactful when she had been grounded by the city, that she's stuck at the new office working on stuff. Like, yeah, I'm building on your tech and now you're running out playing with it and stuff like that. That would have made more sense in my mind versus she has to hang around the firehouse for some reason. That bothered me a little bit. And Trevor has no arc. Trevor's arc is...
Him and Lucky, they both get the short end of the stick. His arc is, I'm going to try and catch Slimer. Oh, Slimer helped us save the day. Hooray. Which Slimer gets a short end of the stick too, because I feel like that's something that if we're homaging the real Ghostbusters,
yeah,
Slimer needs more to do than slime Trevor a couple of times
while living in the
attic. Then save the day almost kind of inadvertently.
Yeah.
And the one liner that they give where Trevor's like, and I know him. Stupid. It means nothing to anyone.
No, I mean, that's his arc. He doesn't even catch Slimer, but two, his arc is he can drive the car now. Because in the beginning, he's complaining about being in the back of the car and I can't do anything. And the car's overheating. They lose power and they have him rewire the car because he's good at engineering mechanical shit. And at the end of the movie, mom's like, you can drive the car this time. That's not an arc. That's not a movement. No. And I'm sorry, but when they go and meet Nadim to try to explain to him, like, dude, this relic you sold to Ray is weird. And what is going on with your backstory? And he and Lucky, yes, I know they established, he says he's 18 now. And I know Lucky's, what, 2-3 years older than him or something like that.
I think that's right, yeah.
Because he lies about his age and she goes, what? He's like, you're not even 16 yet or something like that. And they're making sex quips in, like, Nadim's grandmother has a sex dungeon because it's made of brass and soundproof. And look at her bondage gear. It's like, it creeps me out a little bit. Because he wasn't even aware Lucky was in town. You know, and I'm just like, this makes me distinctly uncomfortable that these two are making jokes about bondage and gear and tying each other up. This is weird.
I mean, it's an obvious joke that I feel like Kumail Nanjiani probably had a hand in. Like,
yeah.
He's in that scene. I could see him being like, this would be funny. And admittedly, it would be if it was like the Channing Tatum Ghostbusters that never happened.
Yes. Yeah. Or Chris Hemsworth quipping about it, you know, with them. Because they're all older, established. The last movie, they were all underage. And it's only been like two years.
Yeah, I hear you. With it being a bunch of late teenager, early 20-somethings being like, oh man, sex dungeon, awesome. That's a little weird.
Especially
like, no kink shaming, but...
No, but especially since they're still living at home. And he's not even allowed to drive the car.
But yeah, you make a great point that the only real character arc or maybe character arcs in this movie are for Phoebe and Ray.
Yeah.
Everyone else is just kind of the same from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem, too, where the original Ghostbusters, the only real arc is that Venkman essentially is using the paranormal studies as a coasting deal.
Yeah.
He just gets a nice cushy job at the university pretending that he believes in ghosts. And then all of a sudden they find a ghost. Now he's like, okay, well, how do we monetize this? And that's his arc, is he basically goes from taking money from a school for a subject he doesn't believe in to getting money for exterminating ghosts that he now knows exist. But like, no one else really has like a character arc. And that's not necessarily something that is necessary in a Ghostbusters movie, I don't think, but when you're trying to create emotional beats, especially in a family drama action movie, you need more depth. And I guess Gunderson, whatever his name is,
Gooberson,
played by Paul Rudd. I guess he has a little bit of an arc where are he and the mom married?
No, they're just dating.
They're just dating. But I mean, at the end of the movie, Phoebe calls him dad. And so like, maybe that's like their sign that they can get married. They're waiting for the kids to feel more comfortable with it or something. But
yeah,
his arc is, I would like to be more involved in the family matters, but am I allowed to be? And the mom says, yes. So like, there's the end of the arc.
Yeah. Because he said, like, who are you to her? And he says, her stepteacher. Not stepdad, but stepteacher, yeah.
Despite moving across the country from Oklahoma to New York with her and her family.
To live in the firehouse together and...
While making inappropriate sex jokes, or we had sex jokes in front of said children.
Yeah, see, that's slightly more acceptable, because they're in their 40s. But yes, it is a little creepy. Which, I mean, me saying it's creepy when the first movie had, you know, the infamous blowjob ghost scene is, you know, is very much dumb, but...
I mean, and I will give this movie credit as well. They move away from the Ivo Shandor stuff.
Thank God.
I mean, technically, we have three movies that deal with that, or three Ghostbusters installments. We have Ghostbusters 1, The Game, and Afterlife that all deal with the Ivo Shandor stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like, as I said when we were talking about like Jurassic Park, kind of, I've made the comparison to Jurassic Park. You can find ways to make these stories interesting, but eventually that well is going to dry up. And with novelties like this, the well dries up faster.
Yes.
Because you can't keep creating that initial awe-inspiring moment of, oh my God, ghosts are real.
Right.
You can only do that so many times, and you can only have so many point of reference characters. Like Camille Nanjiani's character in this entire thing is he's the guy that's like, ghosts aren't real. My grandmother is a crazy psycho woman. Like I'm selling her stuff because I didn't even realize she had a sex dungeon. That's not a sex dungeon. Then he realizes that, oh, I have magical abilities that I have inherited from my grandmother, and she was trying to teach me something that I wasn't paying attention to, but that's an emotional beat we don't have time for. So we're just going to move on.
Okay. So I have a plot question, point question for you. Melody.
42.
See, that's how long she's been dead, I think. Because that style of matchbook with that kind of like color. No. Melody.
That could have been 90s. I knew some, when I grew up in Elgin, there were plenty of restaurants that had those kind of matchbooks when you could still smoke inside.
Correct. So that's my question. Is Melody her real name?
I think so, because they foreshadowed it with the diner. They kind of...
Why is it called Melody's Diner then if her entire family burned down inside of it?
I would assume that it's some kind of... Maybe her family created the restaurant and named it after her. Like maybe she's the oldest child and like, oh, our first daughter, let's name our diner after her. Like maybe it's a Sony production. I don't expect them to have this deep lore.
Well, my thing was, see, I think she was lying about her name. I think that maybe she had the matchbook because that's somewhere they ate at. And so she needed a fake name because she's gaslighting Phoebe for most of the movie. So she picks the name Melody.
So in the 2 hour and 20 minute cut, she finds out what her real name is before she gets sucked off.
Yep.
And for anyone who is about to get upset, that's a reference to the TV show Ghosts, which is on a really good run right now.
Oh, yeah.
Everything from like the Halloween episode into the most recent episode, which has been like 4 weeks.
Fire.
Has been hilarious.
Oh,
it has been
fantastic.
Absolutely hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. Cannot endorse Ghosts on CBS enough.
Paramount Plus, not a sponsor, but could be.
Should be.
Should be.
And Blurt Classic Cinemas should be a sponsor, damn it.
Hell yeah.
I thought the ghost designs of some of those other ghosts were great. Like, I really want to see that weird, creepy one they kept foreshadowing that's in the darkness and the, you know, the aqua, the glass tank, you know. That one would have been cool. The possessor ghost was amusing but stupid.
Interesting concept, but they don't do anything interesting with it.
No.
It can run as a garbage bag because funny.
I mean, I did find that funny as hell.
It's one of the few actual gags in this movie, besides the gags in the sex dungeon.
Oh. Yeah. See, one of the things that I think they should have expanded upon more, but they didn't, is that so in the first movie, they talk about how they use the readings from the library. And he's like, based upon these readings, ghosts seem to have like a static repeating signal kind of thing. I think we can capture and contain ghosts so that's how they built the ghost traps. That's how they built the proton packs. I like that they established this as kind of like a multidimensional thing here with Garaka, and that's why their packs don't work. So she has to use brass, which, by the way, the sound of that new brass kind of works really well. It's like an amped up version of the proton, but there's like a mechanical like grinding to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
the sound design was can't knock the sound design of this. No. Like, this movie was made very well.
Oh, yeah.
There's just little things that, mainly for me, it's the gratuitous Easter eggs. Yeah. And like, I know that that's something that a lot of people have been really critical of with the Ghostbusters franchise, is that it's this weird comedy horror movie that has gained this weird refinement expectation to it through a bunch of 40-year-old neckbeards who view it as like the perfect comedy. And it is a fantastic comedy. It's a great movie. It's a near perfect movie, especially for the 1980s. But it's not something that needs to be on a pedestal and held up like this was the golden age of comedy. No. That is Ace Ventura when he gets stabbed in the legs in the African village and When Nature Calls. So
yeah,
that debate is over.
Yeah. Or or Airplane when they are doing their Roger.
Better
Victor
example. Don't Call Me Shirley. Is this your first time flying? No, I've been flying plenty of times. Nervous, like all these sort of things.
Nervous, yes. But, first time? No, I've been nervous lots of times.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your
that movie
Vector?
Is a one-liner machine.
The other thing I'll say is when she fires, and so they have that new stream color where it's the original stream color, but now there's these green, like those green
ecto cooler green.
Yeah, and but they're like they're patina from the brass. That's cool, you know, and I can understand your criticism of the too many cameos, too many callbacks. Walter Peck didn't freaking need to be there. The end of the movie where Walter Peck.
Where
is
did Bill Murray get his sunglasses?
I don't know.
There's an entire scene where he comes out in from the blizzard.
Yep.
Makes the joke that we see in the trailer. Melnitz in uniform. All right. And they get knocked into the back of the office area by the possessor ghost who takes over Ecto-1, and then the Graka comes out and tries to get down to the containment unit, and Bill Murray's just wearing sunglasses now, and as Graka's rolling up, he takes them off. He says, "Tall, dark, and horny. I needed sunglasses so I could say that line."
You know, I don't know.
That feels like something where Bill Murray's just like, I need sunglasses for this moment. Like, I'm really stoned, so I need to hide it.
Yeah. So the end of the movie, Walter Peck is, you know, he's forced to basically allow the Ghostbusters to exist, which, by the way, this third or fourth movie where the Ghostbusters have to be allowed to exist by the city, whatever. But the thing that slightly pissed me off a little bit is while they're all cheering that the Ghostbusters are now back together, you hear someone obviously ADR'd just above the crowd noise, but below the other sounds go, "There's Dickless over there."
Yep. Yep, and I caught that one.
Really? Someone has to call Walter Peck Dickless?
Yep, because that's a line that you remember and love from the other movies. And that's the thing that's my rub on this movie, is that there is something good here, but it gets watered down in the references to the older stuff. I don't know how you fix it in terms of what studios want you to do, because everything is about making something safe right now.
Yeah.
And what is safe right now is nostalgia. So you're going to make people think, and I can almost guarantee you, I know this will come out after the pitch meeting comes out, but we're recording this at 8:27 PM Central Daylight Time on Sunday, March 24th. The pitch meeting guy is going to say, "People love nostalgia." "That's right, sir."
Oh yeah.
Like the nostalgia is very safe. Mm-hmm. Like that's I can almost see the script from the guy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that is going to come up in that pitch meeting. And I'm putting a timestamp here because I'm not taking credit for it, but I'm saying that is the obvious joke here, is that studios want something safe because it's the easier return on investment than taking a risk.
Nostalgia is super easy, barely an inconvenience.
wow. If there was one nostalgia bait moment that I really wanted from this movie, I wanted Dan Aykroyd or Bill Murray to see Slimer and just say, "Hey buddy, how you doing?"
Oh, that would have been great.
Because he's supposed to be a reference to who's the SNL guy, not Chris
Belushi.
Farley. John Belushi, thank you. He's supposed to be like an homage to John Belushi because he died while they were trying to get this movie made, and he was supposed to be one of the Ghostbusters, and he obviously couldn't be because he died.
Yeah.
I believe it came out that they had already made the Slimer puppet, and the production team was like, "Can we make him look like John Belushi?" And the team was like, "Sure." And then they didn't do anything. And then they had a department meeting. They saw it and it's like, oh yeah, that looks great. Looks just like him. But I would have liked that something in there. Cause I thought that's what they were building up with Slimer, was he was going to see Ray. He was going to see Peter. He was going to see one of them and just be like, my guy.
Yeah.
That's like just a little thing where Venkman sees that Trevor has been slimed. He's like, oh yeah, what you gotta do is bob and weave, like something. Just a little something with the other Ghostbusters who have had experiences with him, because him just getting slimed is for the audience.
Yep.
And that's not satisfying in any way, especially when you put it in the trailer.
Yeah.
Make something of it. Don't just do it to do it. And that's where a lot of this movie falls apart for me. But I will admit that it's not enough to break the movie. Like I said, I think this is, you could argue one way or the other that this is the second, third best Ghostbusters movie. I think a lot of Afterlife is pretty good until you get to the third act where it's just original Ghostbusters again.
Yeah.
Where this is something new, but it's too busy also referencing old stuff. Once you get to a certain point in the movie, it sets up enough plot. And then once the plot is kind of chugging along on its own, we're making references in every scene because we have to fill those references. We have to put those references in to give you that endorphin high to make you think you like this movie, which feels insulting as someone who watches movies to enjoy them.
Yeah.
I don't need you to reference something that I already enjoyed. Let me enjoy this. Show me why I should enjoy this.
When the movie was over, my wife asked me, she's like, because I had told her the whole franchise thing, like, you know, we're going to find out if it's a franchise. She asked, is it a franchise? And I thought about it for a second and I said, yes, but I just don't know how many legs it has. Because I made the Deadpool joke of like, well, they have a cast, you know, a diverse young cast that can carry this thing for 10 to 15 years, you know? I mean, because Phoebe, you know, McKenna Grace is fantastic in this. Paul Rudd is solid. Carrie Coon needs more as the mom, Kaylee. Trevor has a thankless role, but he can, you know, he can do stuff. If they're going to stick around with Lucky and Podcast, sure, make that the team, you know, make him have two, three sets of teams, something like that in the city. And then make sure the next movie is Ray and Winston are fully stepped back. Let them have their sipping tea, looking at what they built, you know, together. You know, that whimsical look at the window was perfect. But of course, they had to bring them all back because they had to shoot one blast of guns before being frozen and useless.
Mm-hmm.
They've passed the torch. The third new movie needs to stand on its own. You have the Ecto, you have the fire station, you have the PAX, you have the new tech, you have the flying drone capture units, you have all the ghosts that have ever been released, re-released into the city. Have some emotional character arcs. Let them run without being, you know, without dragging everyone else with them.
100% agreed. I think they can Men in Black this or do what they were thinking about doing when they had the Channing Tatum cast and crew, where it's like two guys, two girls, and it's a new Ghostbusters squad that is under the mentorship of the original Ghostbusters or the surviving Ghostbusters. And you can still do your references, but try to do something. Yeah. Let us enjoy the cast that we have. Just because we enjoy the previous cast does not mean that the new cast has nothing to offer.
Yeah.
I think Phoebe's dad jokes, scientifically based dad jokes, are amazing. I love those. And I needed more of those.
Yeah. And she's fantastic. They picked a great character to encapsulate Spangler, but also be her own person. And yes, they're probably baiting a little bit with, you know, is it a romance? Is it not a romance with Melody? I don't give a shit. Their scenes worked. The scenes worked. Yeah. McKenna Grace carries it by like that disappointment, the other stuff, that awkward, hey, can I come into come into your bedroom thing? Cause she's doing the Lost Boys. Melody's doing the Lost Boys floating out the window thing, you know? Okay. It works. She has enough charisma to carry it. She and Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon work together well. You have your unit, you know, like you said. So, yeah, I'm basically just agreeing with you.
If there is a stepping back from the old guard, if they do a third Ghostbusters reboot sequel. I also want them to step away from Ghostbusters being a lineage thing.
Mm.
The idea of Ghostbusters is anyone can be a Ghostbuster. Yep. None of these guys are qualified. They smoke, they're overweight, they're out of shape. Like, none of these guys are qualified to be carrying small nuclear accelerators on their back. But they can, and they do.
Okay, so one other random nitpick. What is with movies these days thinking that people don't deserve to be paid? We found out Falcon and the Winter Soldier didn't get paid shit, so they can't get home loans. And now it turns out that the Ghostbusters aren't actually paid by Winston. He's rich as fuck. Tony Stark is rich as fuck. Why aren't you paying these people?
I don't know. That was something that definitely caught my attention too. It just, they get home free home and board, and I guess Winston pays the electric bill.
No, the court's already ruled that college students can get paid for their likeness. The room and board thing is out of there.
Oh, speaking of, did you catch the thing? They did the thing.
What thing?
Merchandise.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the Ghostbusters.
They made Ghostbusters toys in universe.
Yes, they do.
Who the hell made them? Where did that money go? Is that where Winston got his money?
Probably. But you know what? At least they acknowledge Ghostbusters 2, because they're like, and you know, the last time you guys did something in the city, you walked the Statue of Liberty down Broadway.
I was very pleasantly surprised that they acknowledged Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, because they show the kids with them, like, oh, I hate that cereal. I had that toy.
Yep. That was Super Mario Brothers when they used the Mario rap
to use it
for the plumbing commercial. And like, okay, that is good synergy.
Yeah.
I like it. But I will say that I think this is a caveated must see. If you enjoy Ghostbusters,
yes,
I do think you must see it. If you have no interest in Ghostbusters, you can pass. So like, this is a very rare caveat one for me, but that's where I stand. Like if you have a fondness for the Ghostbusters franchise, this movie will do something for you. It won't scratch that good movie itch, because I think there's a lot of lost potential, but if you enjoy Ghostbusters, if you enjoyed Ghostbusters Afterlife, this is a good follow-up.
It's, for me, it's a must-see, because if you're a sentimental dope like me who can get carried with little moments, I've mentioned then Phoebe and Ray and the aging and all that stuff. I liked it. I thought it was sweet. I loved Gary's speech about how, you know, family, you know, is eternal kind of thing. But he's like, but it's not just by blood. It's who you choose to have in your family. I'm like, thank you. Thank you for acknowledging that.
Chosen family is always a good message.
Yeah, I love that. So yeah, it's a must-see for me, because I'm a sentimental dope.
Well, you sentimental dope, tell everyone about our Discord.
Our Discord is fantastic, because you can get to it at tsmackpod@gmail.com, where we discuss everything from the weather to sports, anime, and have occasional long-winded conversations about the fact that Ghostbusters is actually 3 movies, not 5.
Wouldn't it be 4? We already acknowledged that Ghostbusters 2 is not as bad as some people would make you think.
Well, I mean, were they really Ghostbusters in Afterlife? They didn't have their firehouse.
They were in the last 15 minutes. So yeah, please join our Discord. Link is in the episode description. Don't forget to follow us at Talking Smack Pod on all social media platforms, including Blue Sky, Instagram. Alex is bumping his mic.
Sorry. A cat just attacked my crotch.
You can follow us on Blue Sky, Instagram, Threads, Hive Social, Post News, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and Lonnie's website. You can email us at tsmackpod@gmail.com. Thank you to Leo Allen for musical themes. Alex, who's doing the remix?
Dan Marianelli, fresh off of Pandemonium, The Brothers Grimm, Burnout, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. He's taking a little time just for us.
All right. Thank you to Retro Ale Studios for our Ricky avatar and Beppo for our original avatar. Please like, subscribe, rate, review on your podcatcher of choice. And remember, all you have to do to leave a review is say, would you prefer to listen to this or watch Madam Web? Let us know. So please, again, like, subscribe, rate, review. And most importantly, thank you, Alex, for being here and taking the time to go see a movie you were going to see anyway.
Welcome.
And thank you, listener. Dear listeners, so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to us talk about this. We appreciate you, and take care. Watch Ghosts.
Hell yeah.
Two in the box.
Ready to go.
We be fast and
they be slow.